Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports, live from Las Vegas. I'm Matt Esposito, partially hosting tonight. We're waiting on master interviewer Cindy Clark to show up. This is Gary Wyatt.
How you doing?
Who just got back from Bristol, Tennessee.
Yes, I did.
So before we get to that, our guest tonight is late model driver Matt Frady.
How's it going? Okay.
So, Gary, tell us about Bristol.
It was a great show. Excellent. As you know, it got postponed till Monday because it was raining, pouring down rain. So they postponed it, and to my surprise, the track was kind of dry on Monday. It was real dry on Monday, considering how much rain was there.
Right. But from what we saw on TV, it was a good show.
Yes.
For having those
trucks.
I think the trucks, I like the trucks better than the cars. Yeah. I think the trucks.
The trucks went noon that time, I believe it was, and then 4 o'clock that time in Tennessee was the cup cars. And that was a pretty good show for a while, and then, you know, naturally they started spinning out. And
did you say, were you there the whole week for
yes.
practices and stuff?
No, no practice. Didn't see no practice. We were there on Friday when they sent the trucks out, and they just, they're way too much
right.
mud.
Because watching some of the practices, like, I was super impressed with Haley Deegan.
Yes.
She was just hanging that thing out sideways, showing off.
Yeah, she Monday. I keep saying Friday, but Monday, she did. She was doing pretty good Monday.
Yeah, no, she's been holding her own. For being moved up to the big leagues. Quick note: it's confirmation for the general racing community. There will be a racers meeting on Thursday, 5:30 p.m. at the media center on the first floor of the big track. Planning on the first race for Friday and Saturday, April 16th and 17th. You'll be able to sign up and register on that day if you'd like. Rest of the schedule, details, rules, and everything will be explained during the meeting. So the Bullring will reopen.
It sounds like the 16th and 17th.
It means that late models will be back on our track. So.
Hopefully.
Nope, that's good to hear.
So, Matt, you excited? So what have you been doing during COVID? Working on the car? You got some racing in?
Yeah, we raced a little bit out in Havasu. Did the first race of the year out there. Had an open motor at the time. Skipped the second race. Went out and helped my buddy Aaron. And went out the third race with a new 602 motor that I bought. And it's kind of like a rush last-minute job because we were debating on skipping it and stuff to do to the car. And went out and never really test drove the car before going out. We get there.
No practice?
No, before practice. Oh. Like, we get there all the way to Havasu, unload the car, get ready to get out for practice. I jump in. Go to try to put it in gear, nothing. Wouldn't go into gear. And I kind of made a stupid mistake when we were putting everything back in. I used the wrong bolts for the flywheel, and it was the bolt heads weren't allowing the clutch to fully disengage to put it in gear.
Sounds like a rookie mistake.
Yeah, rookie in the last minute, you know. Because I think I did dropping the motor and pulling the weight, set up everything, and less than 6 days, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that was, it's like ever since then, I told everybody, I was like, if it don't drive out the garage, it ain't going.
So did you get the race at all? Like, did you get the
ticket? No, we literally sat there from, I think we started working on the car at about 1 o'clock, and me and one of my crew guys, Sean, we were there till 8:30 that night. We had taken the driveline tranny out 3 separate times, bell housing, clutch off, everything, and bled the clutch. I mean, we went through everything and couldn't figure anything out. And I was just like, what the heck's going on? And finally, when I got it back to the house, I had a buddy of mine, Eric Martin. I was like, dude, I need a fresh set of eyes.
The short guy?
Oh, yeah. but I had him come over, and he looked at it, and that's when he noticed that the bolt heads were hitting on the clutch. And I was like, dude, it can't be. So we found a paint marker and put a bunch of paint on there and put the clutch back up to it, and sure enough, it was hitting it. So...
And you've never been out there before, huh?
To Havasu?
Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. We've, I think this was our third year, I believe, going out there.
Okay. So, I was going to say, to drive all the way out there and just,
yeah,
for the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was the frustrating part.
That's something I would do.
Yeah, no, because we've always gone out there. My first year out there, we had an open motor. And then I believe the second year we went out there, it was like the last half of the year, we went out with the new car that I bought with a 602 motor in it, but it was the open 602. And then this last year is where we did it 1 year with the open motor, and I was like, I can't do that. Too much power for a little parking lot, so.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a fun atmosphere out there.
You like that better than the bowling? Besides it being closer to your house?
That's always a plus, is the bowling close. The atmosphere out in Havasu, it's great. You know, Bill, he's a really great guy. Tries to work with you no matter what. He was even coming over asking me if I needed any parts when I was having the clutch issues.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like good.
Yeah, he's always there for you. I just wish the track had a little bit more to it. I wish they'd get rid of those curbs.
A little closer.
Well, that too. And I really wish they'd get rid of those curbs. Yeah. I mean, those things.
Well, you know, for a long time, those curbs wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then the racers didn't listen, and they kept bringing rocks onto the track.
They still do, even with the damn curbs there.
Bill figured that will fix the problem.
Yep.
Nope, that didn't work.
It's fixed Mark Allison's problem. He's went through about four oil pans. So, yeah.
I've raced out there with Mark Allison. We, him and him had a side-by-side battle, I think it was, for like 26 laps.
Wow.
And that was pretty fun.
Well, we got somebody calling in, I guess.
Hello.
It's probably Cindy. Saying she's going to be even later.
Hold on. Don't go nowhere.
It's probably someone like Aaron.
Mike Miller.
No. Are you there?
Hey, Matt. How did you get started racing?
I was actually, my grandfather was the one that got me into it. He didn't actually race. He tried doing it when he was younger, and he couldn't do it. He was claustrophobic, and so he told me that getting into the car with the helmets and stuff like that kind of freaked him out.
But he was like a fan of racing?
No, he just always worked on cars and he enjoyed it. And I mean, fan, yeah, but he always enjoyed working on cars. He was always working on race cars and always around them. And
how does that translate into throwing your grandson in a race car?
When I was born, they were building a 69 or 70 Chevelle SS. And it was always
a drag strip?
No, circle track out here.
Really?
In the boring. Yeah. And
that's a heavy car.
He did some work to it. It was a good fast car, and they just have pictures of me, like I was throwing diapers and I was spinning on the drive shaft. And I was just always around cars. And then I used to work on a friend of theirs, or a friend of ours' car, Walt Weekly. And I was just always there after school with him working on them. And next thing I went over to his house to get ready to go over there, work on a car. And he's like, hold on, I got to show you something. I need help out back. And there was a car on trailer, and he's like, oh, here you go, Chores.
Wow.
So.
And you're like, now what? What was that, Cindy?
What kind of car was it?
It's Chevelle.
No, this one, it was, it was actually an old home-built chassis. Eric Martin helped build it, and it was a stock Camaro front clip and had the old 92 Chevy Lumina body on it. And we went out for a couple practice sessions and ran that for a little bit. And then I think we didn't even do a race yet. We just did like 4 or 5 practices and then tore the body off and put a new Monte Carlo body on it. And
how old were you at this time?
Oh, I was still 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't do any races because I guess you had to be 16. And so I just kept practicing a little bit. And once I was almost 16 is when we were like, all right, we want to do this. Let's change the body out, update it, and go have some fun.
What class was that?
No, that was back when the late models were still around.
Yeah. That was here at the ballroom?
Yes.
So at 16, you're racing a late model at the ballroom. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. First one I ever got into, I always wanted to do it, and finally got the opportunity.
What was it like? So you did some practice sessions, but what was it like when you went out for your first race? Were you nervous?
Not really. It was actually pretty cool to actually be with a bigger group because, I mean, during practice, you were kind of just, you know, you had your 3 or 4 guys every now and again. And then it was like the first time, you know, the first race you get out there and you think you're racing really close with the guys. And then you're like, you find out, oh, no, you're like 5 feet away from them. And you're like, you need to pinch them down some more. And I was like, but I can't, I'm right there. And they're like, no, you're not. Get down. And I was like, okay.
When you could touch the car.
Yeah, we found that line real quick. We actually hit him. So
what year was that?
Oh, geez. God. No, it was somewhere around like maybe 03, 04 maybe. Maybe even before then.
So did you race the whole season that season?
I believe we did. Yeah, because we were actually really lucky with our motor situation. We always had Howard over at Vegas Machine do the machine work to him. And then my grandfather was the one that actually built the motors and put them together. And we built one 350 that we had. And I mean, it was a great, reliable motor, and we never had any issues with it. We did, you know, the refreshing after each season and going through, you know, plugs and oil and everything else, just keeping everything up to date and refreshed, and it lasted us, I mean, I think like 8 years.
Wow.
It was, never had any issues with it. It was a great motor. And then one season out of nowhere, we were doing a practice, and I went out to go shake the car down, and I think I got 4 laps in, and I checked the oil pressure going down the back stretch, and I was like, all right, it's all right. And went down the front stretch, got about 3/4 throttle, went into turn one, and the car just spun. And I guess the oil pump had completely froze up out of nowhere.
Oh, says, man. I'm done.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was just crazy because it didn't get any, like, give any signs, no nothing. It was just like, bye. Mm. So that was the end of that block and all the parts inside. Yep.
That's 8 years, though. That's pretty good. Gary, what's the longest you've ever had an engine last?
About 6 months.
That's
good. No. But that was hard racing in Pahrump. 24 races a year.
Oh, that's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
My shortest was installing in the car. That was my shortest.
My shortest was getting on the track.
I decided that I was going to build my own engine, and I put the pistons on the rods backwards, and so they hit the head and blew up in the garage.
Well,
on my first skid plate, I blew the head gasket, and I did it right in my driveway. No machine shop, no nothing, just hand tools and aluminum foil, light sandpaper, and put that thing back together, and
yeah,
I raced
it. That one didn't blow up, though.
No, I raced the whole end of the season with it.
Yeah, so that's good. So you raced a late model for 8 years then, Matt?
That's pretty much the only class that I've ever really raced. When the late models went away, I jumped up to the super lights a little bit. And then it just got to be a little bit much with, like, cost and everything else and just trying to keep up with some of the bigger money guys. So we kind of stepped away from it a little bit. And then once we got a hold of another car from a friend of ours, and we slowly built it, put it back together, and went back out and did a few super late model races. And still kind of ran, even with the car we had, it was a real, I think it was like a 96 chassis that was built in 96. And we just kind of ran around with that and did pretty decent once we got it figured out. And then and that was really about it. And once late models came back, we jumped straight back into them and been doing it since.
What's your car number?
40.
Was it always 40?
Yep. So when I first like got to actual drive a car, I played hockey for like 24 years, somewhere around there. And I was playing on multiple different travel teams. And so I was going through a stage where I was just picking like family members, birth year for numbers and stuff like that. And, so I was like, all right, well, my grandfather got me into racing. So I asked him, I was like, well, what year were you born? And he said 1940. So I was like, all right, we'll be 40.
Aw, that's cool. Does he still come out and watch you race?
No, unfortunately, we lost him back in 2017.
Aw.
Yeah, he passed away. He had three different types of cancer.
Did he come out before he passed? Like a big fan.
Yeah, no. Every race that I, you know, while he was still with us, every race that I did, he was out there in the pits working on the car with me. I remember Rob Street actually got a picture of my grandfather working on the car, and I believe that was one of the last races that my grandfather was actually in the pits, because there was like maybe two or three races towards the end where he went up to the stands with my grandmother and just watched from there. And that's when I had Mike Miller and my buddy Sean, you know, a couple other guys helping me out there. So
Mike Miller touched your race car and you still ran pretty good?
Yeah, Mike Miller...
I was just wondering why he claims him as a friend.
Mike Miller, he's actually done quite a bit for me. When my grandfather passed, Mike was there, and honestly, I don't think I'd still be racing if it wasn't for Mike. I mean, I, you know, had a little struggle and kind of thought about it again, and he just was like, let's go do it.
We've always said it's Mike Miller's fault.
I know. Had some good times out in Havasu, though. Oh, yeah, that's a must.
I think that comes from the Spencer Clark effect.
So that was a super late model. And what year was that?
Oh, I think we got back into it with the super late. Maybe around 2013, 2014-ish. And it might have been just one or two races here and there, because we slowly got back into it. And we went out like once or twice, had some issues with the car because it was a brand new car to us that we had finally put back together. Like we had some suspension issues, and then we had The next race, we had an electrical issue. It was just dumb little bugs that were coming up out of nowhere. And it was just the strangest thing because it would be fine during Friday practice and everything. And then as soon as we go to get in the race, it was like, oh, here we are.
Hey, did Gary own that car? This sounds like a Gary deal.
Nope.
Works on Friday and then Saturday, you
don't
throw your hands
work.
Up.
Uh-huh. Welcome to racing.
Yeah.
So is that all the way through 2018
and
2019?
No, 2017. No, it was about 2018 is when I bought the car that I currently have now, I believe. Might have been the tail end of 2017. And I raced that car. I think I raced it a little bit out here at the Bull Ring. And,
what class is that?
In the late models. Because we, once they brought the late models back, we were, me and Miller had talked, and we were going to go for that instead. And did that and had some fun doing that. And then, what was it, 2019, I believe, I took the car to Chris Bray and had him re-clip the front end, and then we put it all back together and tried to come out and race here at the Bull Ring, and then it was all history after that with the COVID situation.
Right. So the new, like, the pro late model rules, is that similar to the rules that we had in 2019, or do you have to make changes?
No, they were pretty much the same. I think we had, I think Tim Richter tried to, you know, when he came back or when he made the prolates, it sounded like he was trying to make them similar to the other tracks that were running them. That way we didn't have to really change, I mean, too much from then to now. There's been a little bit of weight changes here and there, but other than that, it's pretty much been the same.
So, since it's the same, other than Havasu, racing at any of the tracks?
No, not yet. We were planning on going out to Kern, and we've tossed the idea of Tucson around and Madera, but now that the Bull Ring's opening back up, we'll definitely enjoy a 30-45 minute drive.
What? The Bull Ring racing?
that's the rumor that I'm hearing.
So, all we know right now is the 17th is opening night. So we'll be haven't confirmed the other 9 races. So are you going to race all 10 races at the Bull Ring?
If the pocketbook says yes, then yeah. And as long as there's nothing big that happens, I wouldn't really see why not.
That's cool. So now that you've driven a super late model and a late model, what are the pros and cons of those classes? Like, which one do you like better and why?
The super lights were pretty fun, just because they're, you know, a little bit lighter and you're the power and the tires. I mean, I was shocked at how early I was able to get back on the throttle when I was on those tires that they run with the 10-inch slicks. I mean, those things are like gumballs. And, I mean, when we had the car set up pretty good, I was getting back on the throttle, I mean, quarter of the way into the corner. And but I mean, on the flip side, you know, you got the prolate models that I mean, those tires just kind of get better as you run. So I mean, it's a little bit, prolates are a little bit better just because of the cost with the tire situation. So I mean, they both have their pros and cons, but I mean, on, you know, with everybody that's putting all the money into these prolates now, it's almost just like a super late model, it seems like.
Oh, no. I thought the whole idea was to keep the cost down.
Yeah, you've always got those ones people that have the money, and they want to use it, so.
Oh, you always have that. You like a guy in the Delta Decker, a taller, bring out a skid plate car. Oh, that one.
Yep.
But, isn't it
the
602 motor in the prolate model?
Yeah, it's 602s.
That seems like that's a little more affordable than the prolate model.
Yeah, and that's actually what I've got in my car now. Is I went and sold my open motor and turned around the very next day and drove out to Arizona and picked up two 602 motors, one for myself and one for Mr. Kevin Terrell.
Oh, was sent in his garage?
Yeah, well, I've been seeing him getting some parts, so we'll see.
Oh, Kevin's got another job to do on Saturday night.
Uh-oh. I don't even know if I don't know what the Saturday night job for Kevin is.
I think he just likes to sit in the race car in his garage and make race car noises.
Just go out and look at it.
Mom, that's cool. How long have you known Kevin Terrell?
It's been a few years now that I've known him. I want to say at least.
Do you guys have matching tattoos?
Oh, no, I don't have those.
Just filler?
Yeah, pretty much.
The engine that you have that Kevin got is going to be similar to yours then, I would imagine. So it's like the same one?
Yeah, they're pretty much identical. I mean, they just show up pre-built and in a crate ready to drop in if you want, so.
Oh, that's cool. So then when you spank him, you can clearly say the driver.
Yeah, it's pretty much, that is the one downfall to the 602s. I mean, it is nice being that it's kind of like a, economical to where it's cheaper for everybody, but it just leaves it then down to, the setup and driver and everything else, so. Rather than having the three aspects to determine, on who's better, and then it just drops it down to the two aspects of just the setup and driver.
Isn't that better?
Yes and no. I mean, if you got a bigger pocketbook for the engine and all that kind of stuff, then I would say no. But with the 602s, I mean, they're pretty good, reliable motor, and it is, for the guys, the smaller budget teams and everything else, it's a pretty good situation and choice to go with.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. I know that, Sarah and that SRL, or not SRL, but I guess the Spears Pro Late Model, they're getting some car count, so it kind of feels like it's going to be like the next, like when the Modifieds first came out, they all had spec motors, so it makes it, like you said, more affordable and more people can get into it. It's not really necessarily an entry-level class, but it's, once you're full-on addicted and you want to go faster, it's a good step.
Yeah.
So other than the Bullring, would that be the only track that you would try this year, or are you going to try Havasu again?
Havasu, we're going to go back to when they open up. They have a winter series, so I'm sure we'll go back there. We've kind of tossed around Madera, and then we were thinking about trying for Kern on June, I believe it is.
So with Kern, though, that's a much bigger track. Would we have to change more stuff?
We'd have to do a little bit to the setup, make sure the body bracing and everything is good. I mean, because you travel, you have so much speed over at Kern, being that it's a bigger high banked half mile. There's been times where your bodies will either dent in or rip off or any of that fun, good stuff.
You don't have to change your rear end ratio, though?
Yeah, we'll have to change the gears. I mean, but that's anywhere that we go.
I don't know. I've heard people say the first time they're at Kern, they're like, whoa, that track is super fast looking, kind of.
Yeah, and I've actually got lucky is Jason Kaiser. He's been there a few times, and me and him have talked about it quite a bit. So
what did he say?
He said it's a fast track and it's pretty fun.
Fun, not scary?
I mean, you kind of got to block out that aspect.
Did you ever go to Mesa Marin?
No, I did not.
Mesa Marin, the first time I saw it, I was intimidated. And then when I realized I was looking at the turn, I was really intimidated.
Yeah.
But I heard that Kern is
Yeah, I have another friend of mine. He said he went there, and I think he said it was the turn four wall. The first time he went out and got up to speed, he said the turn four wall scared him because it came up on him so quick.
Right.
So, when it's, I mean.
But if you're scared, you know, don't do it, right?
Yeah, you kind of just got to block out that aspect of it and realize that.
The wall comes up on you fast.
Yeah, you know all about the wall, right? But you can't be that scared. I mean, you just got to go for it. It's all relative, too. You just got to be faster than the next guy.
Yep.
How fast you're going. So let's go back to the bull ring a little bit. I know they did just announce today that we are running 10 races at the bull ring. And there is, for anybody listening that's interested, a meeting at the track in the media center in the infield of the big track Thursday at 5:30. So if you're interested in running the bull ring, you have questions, you can come out there. The hope is that you can pre-register. The rumor also is that we'll have to be NASCAR licensed. There's benefits to that. Also, the rumor is that we need some help out there too. So let's say you can't really race yet because your car's not put together, but you want to participate. We need help maybe with, I want to have like a welcome committee, like greeting fans when we can have fans. So obviously not on the 17th because we can't have that many fans and we won't have that much time to tell everybody about it, but maybe help with being an official or just help out there. So putting that out there, if anybody, if you can't race, but you want to come out and get paid to be there and do something, come to that meeting on Thursday. Let everyone know that you're interested in helping out. But the lucky ones that get to race. Also, the rumor is that every class gets to race. And we're going to put all the classes on the track at the same time and then wet the track down and then have like a temp. No? Okay, wait.
I mean, can I get rain tires for my car, though?
No, do you ever see that? What's that dirt race where it's like an enduro race and there's like 470 cars at start and they go like 24 hours?
Dirt?
What's it called?
Is it in the dirt?
It's in the dirt, of course.
Yeah, I don't know what it's
called.
You
don't remember what it's called?
Yeah, I've seen some enduro races like that where they do that.
Yeah, so we're thinking of doing that. That way everybody that's been pent up, they haven't got to drive their car all COVID time, bring the car out, we'll just put you all on the track. Actually, no, but we're thinking every class because we won't have the opportunity to pack the stands, so might as well pack the pits.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have a race car, dust it off, grease it up, put some fresh fuel in it, come out. 16th is Friday night for practice, and if you show up, you get to put your car on the track. See how it goes. Also heard, Matt, are you going to put your skid plate car back together?
Well, I don't have it. Get a new one, rebuild it.
There's one in his backyard. Oh, my gosh. So the Smothermans are going to bring it.
Oh,
they're bringing 4 or 5 skid plate cars.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's trouble.
I wish I could be there to show them how it's done. But I can't be there. So that's exciting, right? I don't want to. Oh, you want to sit?
Playing music.
There we go. We get to see Cindy's pretty face.
No, I'm going to cover it right now. There we go. So, Matt, if you could drive any race car in the whole world because money was no object, what would your dream race car be?
Cindy Clark's skid plate car.
That is not that much fun.
The first one or the second one?
I don't know.
Sprint car, dirt late model, Indy car,
monster truck,
trophy truck.
I don't know. Maybe a
Bandolero.
No.
A dwarf.
I don't know. Maybe like that. What was it? The C6 Corvette that Dale came out with his son. The road course car
for Chevy. I don't know nothing about those.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was my grandfather always really enjoyed Corvettes, and it was kind of something that he kind of passed over to me. And I just think that would be really cool to try one of those.
Have you seen the new one?
Oh, geez.
They're crazy, insane.
It looks like a Ferrari to me.
I know. A friend of mine didn't let me drive it, but he took me for a ride in it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the new ones.
Really? I like the new ones. What about that track over in Pahrump? That'd be fun. That used to be a Corvette track.
Oh, Spring Mountain?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there one time, I believe.
Do you drive on it?
Nope.
You've got to see it.
Yep. And I've driven past it a few times.
In my dreams, I have enough money to buy one of those condos and just roll out, get in my race car, do a few laps. You know, some people get up and jog in the morning.
Go have some coffee and go back.
Yep. I'll just take the race car out. That would be so sweet. And then go over to front site, shoot a few rounds.
Yeah. That'll always be fun.
No, I have to work for a living. So you haven't really thought about any other racing, you love late models?
I mean, that's all I've ever really done. I mean, I've jumped into a Thunder Roadster one time.
Oh, yeah?
But, I mean, and I've raced a Bomber. Thunder Roadster was a little trippy. I mean, jumping from a late model to Thunder Roadster, and you're like, the heck, I'm sitting in the center of the car, and I can see both front wheels.
No, that's weird.
This ain't right.
Is it lighter?
Oh, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, and then it was being able to drive it in a little bit deeper. That was the weird part.
So the wall's even closer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a little sketchy. But just knowing that you can actually throw the car down in there and, you know, with the weight and everything else, it would stick. And that was – took me I can't remember what lap time I ran when I did it, and then went back out the very next time and – took out like 3/4 of a second off my previous time.
Oh, dang.
So that was fun.
It seems like you could have had a career in that. How come you think that class died?
Honestly, I don't really know. You slowly seeing the car count like slowly dropping every like year by year. And then it started then after that, it was race by race.
Why though? Because it seems like you said, it's fun to drive, sticks in the corner, you drive it in deep.
I don't know.
Money thing?
That's a good question. With
or
that,
I just moved up.
I know there was a couple guys that had moved up, but I really never really thought too much about that one.
Other than money, what do you think killed the super late models? Because there's some people who have money, like you said, they're just bringing it to the other classes.
I mean, honestly, the way that the super lates were getting out here was more of a tour type car to me.
Yeah, but isn't that what you want? Like a stepping stone to a tour type?
No, to me, honestly, I don't think that should be your weekly racing series. If you have a car like that, that is more that
like
needs
a Tyler
to stay.
Bosey car.
Yeah, that needs to stay more of like a tour type situation. And, you know, it got too far away from what super lates were. You know, back in the day where it was actually a weekly racing actual series. And then it's just like, if you actually like look, you know, multiple tracks, they don't have super lates and it's all late models and stuff like that they have as their actual like track specific weekly racing series. And the supers are actually the touring series. So, I mean, that was just my outlook on it. And then it was, again, just the money situation where, I mean, you can buy one of the McGinnigal motors for like $20,000. And, I mean, it's just like, that's insane. So.
Or you can go back east and get a chassis for $100,000 without the engine.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
A whole nother story. You said Chris Bray helped you reclip your car. Is that something like, are you guys his friends or is that something he does for anybody?
He's got that deal going with Pathfinder, that's what he ended up putting on my car, and actually informed me that my whole chassis was bent all to hell. He had to heat it up on all four corners and push it down with a forklift to
even. Did you do that, or do you buy it like that?
unfortunately, I bought it like that.
Oh.
But I didn't know the car. We never had any issues with it. It ran really well. And
yeah.
I mean, it was just kind of one of those deals where we were like, all right, let's upgrade it.
Well, did you know it's a different? Or have you even got to race it yet?
Yeah, we've raced it. We've gone to Havasu. Once we figured it out in Havasu, we were pretty good for a little bit. And then last race was a pain. Couldn't get away from the flat tires. But at the Bullring, we did pretty decent with it. For the first race out there, we had a little stagger issue where the rear stagger got a little bit too much. So it was just like entering the corner, it was way too loose. And I mean, but the first five laps, it was like a rocket. And I think I qualified like 0.3 off of Klein and Miller. I was upset about it because I didn't like the lap. And then Miller was like, what are you mad about? You've never been this close to Chris Klein before. I was like, I don't care. The lap sucked. And he was just trying to bit my head that we were good. Don't worry about it. I was like, all right, whatever. First five laps goes out. And I was like, okay, cool. We got a chance with this. And then out of nowhere, it was just like, nope. Stagger went to hell and car went around and it was just downhill from there.
Oh, man. How does that happen? Too much pressure?
Yeah, the pressures. And I mean, once you slide and build up the right rear pressure, that's going to grow that one more than it would the left. And
well, you're not supposed to pitch it sideways.
Yeah, I know.
Speaking of sideways, have you ever done dirt?
Yeah, my first ever race actually was on dirt out in Pahrump with Chris Birdsong and PC Weekly. We built the car. The total amount of time that we actually put on it was 18 hours. And we
like a Pahrump car?
And some beers.
Yeah, well, I was too young to drink at the time.
Oh, like that matters.
Yeah. But I would come over for a couple hours after school because it was at PC's house. We'd work on the car, and we had it down to like literally the minute of when his mom would show up to get home. And we would stop working on the car about 5 minutes before she would get there, push the car around the corner to an empty little lot behind everybody's houses and leave it there and then start all over again the next day.
So when did mom find out?
I honestly don't think she found out until the day we loaded it to go to prom. It was already too late. So, yeah, that was when my racing started actually driving.
How'd you get picked to drive?
It was just we were all buddies and all working on everybody's car together. And I, at the time, was only working on the cars. And then we kind of just, like, flipped a coin to find out who drove what, like, when. Like, if we did, like, we all did the practice. And then they were doing heats at the time. And I got to drive in the heat, and I think I started, like, dead last. And I think I finished second, right up on the leader. And I think Chris was the one that actually drove, I want to say he drove the main. And, yeah, it went. Things started falling apart.
And that's why you were chosen.
Yeah.
Because only 18 hours in the car because Chris.
Yeah. That was actually a real entertaining deal, though. I mean, I remember something broke on the car after the practice, or during the practice, something broke, and then there was that little area that goes down the hill right next to Prump, and we actually hopped the fence because there was a bunch of old junker cars down there. We're down there hopping the fence with saws and wrenches and everything, trying to look for a part. And then it was actually scary because the next morning, because we slept out there, we woke up. Well, we slept at the track, and we woke up the next morning, and I just so happened to look down where we were, and there was, like, three Dobermans down there. I was like, nope, you guys need another part? That's all you. Don't ask me to go back down there.
Man, they were sleeping on the job.
Yeah, thankfully.
Luckily.
Yeah.
That's funny. How'd you know Chris Birdsong?
Just through PC and then growing up with, going through late models with him.
How'd you meet PC?
My grandfather introduced me to his dad because my grandfather worked on his dad, or PC's dad's Walt, worked on his car. And then we always would go over there and work on their cars. And then Walt and my grandfather would always stop at like 3:30 for RPM tonight. And they're like, oh, well, beer 30. And then me and PC would just keep working on the cars.
Oh, so are you guys like around the same age?
No, PC, I'm 32. PC, I believe, is 38, 39-ish now.
Older.
Yeah, so he's a few years older than me.
Birchdog still acts like he's 12, but he's probably...
he's giving him some years, huh?
He's just a big kid, that's all.
For sure. Do you watch his YouTube channel?
Sometimes I've peeked at it and looked at it, and I was like, oh, geez. What are you getting into?
It's pretty fun to watch, though. Last time I went to prom, he shows up by himself with the General Lee towing, no crew, so I pointed myself. And then he breaks stuff. He's like, hey, can you grab me this wrench? So his toolbox is in the back seat of the General Lee.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have a pickup truck. I'm like, okay, so you just got to move the seat back, get in there. It's hilarious. He don't care. He's up there to race.
Yep. He's there to have some fun.
Love it. So we're thinking of helping him. He's been racing dirt at Mojave.
Mm.
You ever been to that track?
No, I haven't. Ever since that one deal with Perump, I haven't really been around the dirt scene too much.
Yeah. Speaking of dirt scene, I heard that Arizona Speedway is shutting down this weekend.
No, they extended that to the end of November.
Oh, really? So
yes.
They get the whole season?
Yes.
When did they do that? No one called them?
About a week ago.
Okay. I didn't get the memo. Well, that's good. But that's sad, though. Another track going by the wayside because of development. Hopefully, I guess that's one thing we're lucky about with the Bullring is for sure they're not going to build housing around it and shut it down.
No.
Because the big track, there's way too much money involved in that. So we always have that to hopefully do. So.
Yeah, that is a plus.
Yeah, and with the...
As long as it'll stay open.
The new group taking it over, you know, it seems like they're listening or going to listen to some of the racers and kind of, you know, try to make it a nice place to race. So we'll see.
I'm trying to think what I can say.
Well, it just seems like everyone who's gone out of town has really complimented how the tracks have been run, how the different tracks have been run out of state. So hopefully we'll bring some of that here.
Bring some of that here, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you hear when they go to other tracks?
Just they're appreciated by the track owners. You know, the track owners are actually out there talking to the racers and, you know, asking questions, doing, you know, Q&A type stuff. Like, hey, where'd you come from? You know. How'd you like it here? Can we do stuff better?
So as a racer, that'd be something you would want?
I think so, to feel like you're somewhat appreciated, that you're not just there.
How about you, Matt? Or do you care? You just want to race?
I mean, to get the, you know, the track, I don't know what you would call them, operator or whatever. You know, like I was telling Gary, with Bill coming over, it's always... trying to think of the word. It's always nice to have that where, you know, like Bill over there at Havasu, he always remembers your face. I mean, you can be gone the entire year, show up the next year, and he'll know exactly who you are. And when I had the issue with the clutch situation, he was over there telling, you know, asking me what I needed to see if he had it. He told me he's got a clutch that I can use if I wanted it. He's always came over to ask how the car is doing and this and that and the other, and kind of like throwing some suggestions out. And, that's always something good to have rather than kind of having just kind of like the cold shoulder guy, you know, that you try to talk to him and he's like, oh, you know, push you away.
Right.
Well, it's a feel good moment. You know, you're there and you get that little bit extra excitement to race, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, if you're having a little frustrated time and just have somebody that stops to talk to you and find out what you need and offer something for you. It's always kind of like.
And then when it's the promoter, that's
double
bonus.
Especially when they try to actually get personal and talk straight with you, not at you and everything else. And I mean, sometimes I know when you talk to the promoter, it's not always a good thing because you might be in trouble.
How do you know that?
We won't talk about that.
Why not?
I mean, did have a few run-ins with Tim Richter, but I never had, you know, they were always settled and never had any issues with him at the end. So it was actually honestly sad to see him leave. But, you know, I've heard some of the stories on what happened. So, I mean, can't really blame the guy. So
I thought it was just COVID.
I heard it wasn't because of COVID.
Right.
But then again, I've heard two or three different things. So
yeah,
heard some things more than some of the others, but I don't know.
Yeah. I've been around the bowling for 20 years too. And I thought he did a good job of, you know,
yeah,
all the people that have had that position, you know, he cared and he's a racer. I think that was important too.
Yeah. And then, you know, you get some of the, you know, some people were saying that he, towards the end, he was getting a little biased towards certain people.
What?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hearing.
I'm sure the job's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it's staffing too. If you don't have 100% staff that's backing you up, you know, anyone who's been in management knows how that works.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing too. Like, there's management and then there's like racers, though. Those are two different things for sure. Do you watch NASCAR racing on TV?
Sometimes. It's to me, honestly, NASCAR is
a super late model tour car that goes a little bit faster.
They're just, I mean, especially with this next gen car that they're coming out with, I don't think I'm going to watch it. They're trying to get too much like Formula One and everything else where like single lug nut and sequential shifter. It's like what? Everyday car has that. You have your 4, 5, 6 lug nut, whatever it may be, and then you have, if it's a manual, it's a H pattern. There's no sequential shifters. Like the only thing I will give them, you know, a pat on the back for is they did move the driver over more towards the center of the car. Some, I mean, I can understand that as a safety deal, but I mean, they're saying that, yeah, it's going to make it for better racing. And it's just like, you guys keep changing so much stuff so fast. It's like, change one thing at a time, not 10 things.
Yeah.
So
what do you think about them putting dirt on the track on Bristol, for example?
Some of the racing was good. And then it just got to a point sometimes where it was like literally a caution fest. And it was just like, I felt like every time it was like, I'd pick my head up and it was caution.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
and they've already announced they're going to do it in 22.
Hmm. What did you think of it?
I thought it was great.
He was there.
But I like
drink.
I like dirt racing too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was great.
So you would go back next year?
Nope. Going to Martinsville.
Are they putting dirt on Martinsville?
No. I've been there. I'm going to Martinsville.
No,
I've been
to
the dirt at Bristol.
Oh, you've been there, done that?
Yeah. Man, it's old news.
So,
I'm going to.
What about, I heard they're going to road course in Texas.
Dakota.
I didn't hear that.
Mm-hmm. No, it's supposed to be going on this year, I believe.
Yeah, May, I think.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
Should be interesting. I mean, especially for the guys that didn't get a chance to test there. I seen Kurt Busch has been able to test there. And
is that the rain tire deal that he did?
No, he actually did the actual test there, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a couple other guys that tested there, but I don't know who.
But is that more to IndyCar-ish?
No, I think it's actually, I enjoy watching some of the road course racing.
More skill.
Yeah, it brings another skill asset that you need to have, and some of the guys actually have that they don't get to show. So I think, I mean, a lot of the guys, you know, you always hear them when they're talking about they came up through karting, and I mean, that's all on road course.
Mm-hmm.
So something cool to watch them do.
Cool. Well, that should be a good year. At least I feel like they're trying, you know, throw some dirt out there, throw some more road courses. There's rumors they're bringing back some of the old tracks.
Well, the one thing NASCAR is doing, and like I said on one of the other shows, I'm not sure who got into whose head or whatever, but they've been really promoting the short tracks.
The local short track?
Yeah, all the short tracks. Late model, they're in every, you know, broadcast, every weekend, they talk about the short tracks. Go visit the short tracks. Go see, you know, the late models. Go see all the different classes. So, you know, they're trying to at least give a little nudge to get some of these people out to the short tracks.
That's good. If we don't grow more racers, I wonder what it's going to be like in 20 years, you know? Like you said, you grew up helping your grandpa work on his car. Like, we all grew up working on cars.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids nowadays, you can't work on those cars. They're all computer chips.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I used to...
You have to have, like, a computer and a tuner program.
Yeah, and I've been going out to the boring since the start-finish line was on the other side of the track.
Oh, wow.
So
you're like a baby.
Oh, I was in diapers still getting rolled around on the little stroller.
For sure. Cool. That's the thing. How do you get the kids involved now? And it's not the short track.
My son, I've got my 7-year-old. He loves racing. He loves being around it. He wants to be at every single one of my races.
That's.
I mean, my son's almost as tall as Kevin, but.
Again, that's not Kevin you're talking about, right?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, my son, he was wanting to get into a bando for a while, and then he's playing hockey now, and I told him, I was like, are you wanting to do hockey or what? Because I'm not gonna make him, like, choose on what he wants to do. If he's enjoying hockey, then I'm going to let him go with that.
Did he get the hockey from you because you used to play hockey?
Probably.
Yeah.
Because I'm the only one in the family that's played hockey, and his mom used to speed skate, so.
Oh, cool. So you got ice skating as a family and stuff?
No, she didn't do the ice skating part. But when she's got them, she'll bring them to hockey and everything. And, he had to take some time off because he actually broke his tibia.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was doing hockey and he came from the side of the net. Kid fell in front of him. He shot the puck, fell on top of the kid, and another kid fell on his leg.
Oh.
And twisted his leg like a full 180 and snapped it.
Did the puck go in the net?
I think it did.
Oh, well.
But I was too worried because all I heard is him scream, and I was like, that's not the normal scream.
Oh, no.
So.
Kind of sounds like Gary when the Kings lose.
Oh, yeah. The guy's been on a losing streak.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he could do both.
Hockey nowadays is so expensive that
more
my
than
pocket,
racing.
I was gonna say more than racing.
That means I'm gonna have to retire. Oh yeah, yeah. And the crazy thing is, like, hockey from when I was playing it when I was his age to what it is now, it's insane. Like, even for house league, I think it's like $400 for the season.
Wow.
$400 or $500. And back when I was playing, it was like $180. And I was like, what the heck is going on with this? I can't do both. I mean, if I'm going to do both, I'm going to have to retire my car.
You have to get a sponsor for your kids' hockey.
Oh, geez.
Put their name on this hockey gear.
Right. Yeah, that's...
On a stick.
So yeah.
When
he goes
to shoot the puck, you can see the sponsor.
Hey.
Just cover him in a banner. I don't care.
Right on. Do you have any sponsors that you want to thank?
Got Dynamis, they've helped me, and then AJ Industries West, they've helped me out quite a bit. Did have Sunstate Components for a while, and then had some family pitching a little bit here and there.
Family support, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, we appreciate you being part of our racing family here on Wheels Now. Thanks for coming in, Matt.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in, Cindy.
Yes, thanks for listening.